Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 22 of the MV Red Podcast, as we are less than, I think, 10 days out from the 2020 presidential election. And a lot has occurred since our discussion, I think, last couple Sundays ago with Ryan Gerdusky.
Is it Gerdusky or Gerdusky?
He's going to kill us if he...
I don't know.
It's Gerdusky. Anyhow, we are going to talk a little bit tonight about the presidential debate, since we didn't talk about the first... Well, we talked a little bit about the first debate, so we'll talk a little bit about the second debate, if we think it's going to have any impact on the race. I did want to touch a little bit on the Ohio 13 debate between Christina Hagan and Tim Ryan. We'll do that maybe towards the end of the episode. But I also want to talk about early voting data in the key battleground states, as well as the polls, as we're getting close. We're getting close, Dane, to the big day.
Yeah. We also have to talk about Hunter Biden. I've seen Hunter Biden's penis. Your face when? No.
What?
Yeah. They are. So they leaked photos from his laptop, and they're in like the dark corners of the internet. Right. But they are leaking. These are clearly Hunter Biden. There's like him smoking crack. And he keeps taking like selfies of himself naked with various prostitutes. And they've leaked all these photos. I've seen them. There are tons of we'll get to that in a second. But that, I think that's a good thing. Like, people should watch the episode because they'll get to hear about Hunter Biden and all that. This is a big deal. We can't neglect this. But anyways,
we have somebody in the chat asking if we're Richard Barris, and he's asking if we're going to be putting a lid on it after tonight for the rest of election season. I think whoever they are on YouTube, we will not be. I at least want to have one more episode, like a prediction episode, maybe another one. We'll see if we could fit it in around our work schedules. But no, we are not Richard Barris, although I do watch him enough to know everything that seems to his thinking and... I don't know. We'll talk about that with the poll. So, Barris because of the music. Yeah, we use the same software as Richard Barris.
That software.
StreamYard. So, Dane, let's first talk about the debate. It was, I guess, let me first share my thoughts. I thought it was important for Trump to, first off, I'll give credit where credit's due. I thought, is it Kristen Welker from NBC?
I think it's Welker.
Yeah, Welker. Is it Kirsten or Kristen? I don't know. Well, nonetheless, the moderator did a fine job. I did not have high expectations just after the first debate with Chris Wallace and then the second debate that was canceled and Steve Scully. I'm sorry, I have a wire coming out through. Steve Scully completely lying about his tweet to Anthony Scaramucci. And then when I saw the debate topics for debate three, I had low expectations. But I thought she did a very good job of keeping them both to task. And to give where I was really impressed with her is she went in the weeds on some issues that I never thought the moderator would talk about. Like she was open to talking about the laptop. She didn't press too much, but she at least mentioned it.
No, she mentioned it. Yeah.
And Dane, your wife is asking you to tilt your camera down a little bit. I guess I didn't pay any. There we go.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Shanley. So I thought it was important for Trump to come out and not be so aggressive like we talked about. Because we said, if you just let Biden talk, maybe he's prone to saying something stupid. To Biden's credit, I don't think for the first hour, I don't think he said a lot of stupid stuff. I think he seemed overly rehearsed, and that's probably what his 4-day lid was all about. But you could tell, I think the last half hour is when things just started going a little bit south for him. And his answers on fracking and especially on oil were not good, to put it mildly. And I'm sure his campaign would have liked him not to mention that. And I went back and I watched a little bit of the debate. It was Trump just randomly at the end of an answer, just asking Biden about that. And then that's when Biden had responded as he did. So I don't know if you remember that, Dan. It wasn't even necessarily a question. It was Trump going, talking, just at the tail end. He just looks over at Biden, just pretty much asks the question. And Biden gave him a nice gift on a silver platter.
Yeah. I remember that. I think Trump did very, very well at this debate. It was probably his best debate of all of the debates. And I think one of the reasons he did well was because Trump at the last debate made you seriously question whether or not he had the ability to restrain himself to hold back. You know, he seemed like he was on some sort of drug in the sense that he was constantly going after Biden. And I think it was to his detriment because Biden was clearly giving, you know, muddled answers, confused answers, lackluster answers at the last debate. Whoa, we just got zoomed in real big. That was pretty crazy. Trump was just annoying and it was hard to listen to him. And it was just, he was obnoxious and you rooted against him because he was just so rude. So at this next debate, Trump restrained himself remarkably well. And I think he won. And I know a lot of people on the left that I talked to are centrists or not Trump fans all said that they felt that Trump had won or did well. And I think the big tell was that the media declared it a tie, right? So of course the media is going to declare it a tie. Anytime Trump does well, they're never going to give him the outright victory. They're just going to say it was a tie. So I think he did very well. And I think that this was my read of this election is perhaps controversial, but I do believe that the average American wants to vote for Donald Trump, but he is just so personally obnoxious to them that they can't swallow it. So they'll vote for Biden, not because they're really a fan of Biden's policies, but because, you know, they like Biden's temperament over Donald Trump's temperament, right? And Donald Trump is so obnoxious on some levels that the average American, and this is just a take, right? I'm not saying I believe this. I'm saying the average person wants to vote against him just to shove it to him. But what Trump managed to do at this last debate was he didn't come off horribly. I thought he came off very well. He had actually a pretty good firm grasp of the issues. And Biden didn't do well. Biden's just kind of a mediocre debater. He's just kind of flat. And I think he gave people that were on the fence or were looking for a justification to vote for Trump, he gave it to them. So I think it helped him. I don't know how much it helped him because we're still, you know, we have 50 million early votes in. The people have already voted, et cetera. But I do think it helped him dramatically. And it was the momentum that he needed. If he would have failed this debate, it would have been game over. He did well at this debate, and I think it's going to keep the election. You know, it gave him momentum. I don't know if he'll be able to close the gap, but I think he'll definitely be able to push forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a week before the night of what was supposed to be the second presidential debate. He had a town hall with NBC, and I was very impressed with how he handled that with Savannah Guthrie because she was going after him. And I thought, he handled himself as well as he could with her going after him, but his answers were really strong when he was talking one-on-one with the voters, the average voters. But fast forward a week, if you watch the first half hour, Biden was kept looking at him and he was trying to get under his skin and trying to get Trump to become unhinged and make a fool of himself. And to Trump's credit,
I was shocked.
It was stunning that he just kind of stood there and just took it. And I thought that was very important. You mentioned about undecided voters, and I was talking about my cousin, Nico, about this earlier this evening. Here's my thought on it.
Nico Suave?
Yes. So if you're still an undecided voter, you probably don't like Trump, but there is something that is keeping you at least open to the idea of voting for him. Because
maybe what's that? I was just going to say, maybe it might have something to do with the Democratic Party becoming a massive communist, anti-American, let's kill white people and defund the police party. That might have something to do with it.
That could have something to do with it. But I just think to myself, The media has, you know how the media feels about him. You know how the Democrats feel about him. You know how some people think you're a racist if you might support him. But there's something keeping these undecided voters at least open to the idea of voting for Trump. And I think Trump's approach on Thursday was very important because, again, it gave, I'm hoping it gave these undecided voters an opportunity or a glimpse into him from a different perspective, where he wasn't so, like, I don't know how to say this, wasn't so harsh, but right. He was willing to listen to his advisors, who at least probably told him, like, listen, you need to tone it down if you want to have any chance in this election. And he did that. So I think it was very important. I watched the Frank Luntz focus group. I'm not the biggest fan of Frank Luntz. I think sometimes he makes a damn fool of himself on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I listened to his focus group, and they had a lot of positive things to say about Trump's approach. And I think at the end, or at some point, they had asked who maybe thought Biden did better, and maybe only one or two had thought Biden had done better in the debate. And there's just something about some of their responses that made you think that they, these undecided voters, were going to ultimately vote for Trump. We'll see. But I think it was a net positive. I think Jack Posobiec had tweeted something to the effect of when he got off stage and he was going to his motorcade, he looked at his staff and it says, let's go finish this off. And I kind of got that impression, like, you know, he felt like he had control. I think he knew probably midway through when he complimented Kristen Welker that he was doing well.
Yeah.
And I think he felt, especially at the end there when Biden had that remarkable statement about oil, that's when he felt like, you know what, let's go finish this off. Let's just go win this thing.
My favorite, not to interrupt, sorry. I'll let you
finish. No, I'm done.
My favorite part was when he was like, I'm sorry, me, milk does, so obnoxious. was when he was like, who built the cages, Joe? Because, you know, that's one of the most annoying things, right? Is I understand that people disagree on politics, and I'm all for that. But what I really don't appreciate is the sanctimony, right? And the people that vote Democrat believe that, like, you know, the Catholics believe in you go to the confession booth and you get absolution from confessing to the priest. And that role, the need for some form of, like, private absolution of one's sins, reconciliation to God, right? It stays with the Democrats because they act like by voting for the Democratic Party candidate, whoever it is, like senile Joe Biden, it cleanses them of their sins. And they are such moral and holier than thou people. And it's just like, give me a break. And so one of the things that they always go on about is like, I am going to vote for the party that does not put kids in cages. No matter where we stand on this debate, surely we can agree, let's not put kids in cages, right? And then they go on about that. It's just like, okay, whatever. Well, the reality of the situation is a lot more complicated than the little lines. And when Trump was like, well, who built the cages, Joe? Who built the cages? I thought that was a brilliant line. Who built the cages? Because to me, it takes the winds out of their sanctimony. And Joe Biden had no answer because, of course, it was the Obama administration who built the cages. The famous photo of the little girl in the cage crying comes from 2014 in the Obama administration. And, you know, the reality is more complicated, right? Like, children were being used as coyotes were using children as a way to get into the border. So they were abducting children. They were doing sex trafficking of children. And that was the way that they were getting in. And by ending catch and release, it cuts down on that. But to me, that line was brilliant because it just kind of took the sanctimony out of the Democrats. Who built the cages? Who did build the cages? Who, you know? The other thing I want to mention really quickly, this has not been a foreign policy debate. Does anybody remember 2016? Foreign policy was a big deal. There was ISIS, right? Mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda, all of this. And you don't hear about it anymore because the Democrats don't really have a foreign policy. And the foreign policy that they do have is liberal interventionism, right? They'll send your son to die in Syria or Belarus or Azerbaijan or wherever the conflict is so that they can promote, I don't know, people using the correct pronouns and like Farsi or something ridiculous like that for their gender identity. And that's the Democratic foreign policy. And then when your kid gets his arm blown off and comes back home, if he happens to be white, they're going to say, hey, you've got white privilege. That's the Democrats' foreign policy. But nobody wants to talk about it. So that's why you've noticed none of these debates, foreign policy hasn't come up, right? Like country, the world was falling apart and things are generally at peace.
It's a
peace agreement, right?
It's a losing issue for them.
It is a losing issue, so you don't hear it at all.
Because remember election night 2016, what's the guy on NBC who's always in the war zone? Who's their anchor who goes to all the wars?
Do you know? I have no idea.
Not Peter Alexander. Anyways, I remember him going crazy, and he was talking about like all the leaders around the world. This guy's going to be in charge of the nuclear code, North Korea. Remember the whole thing with North Korea? We're going to go to war with North Korea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and in Iran.
The guy's friendly enough. At least we're willing to talk with him, and there hasn't been a war with North Korea. He's pulling our troops out of a number of countries. Then you have all these peace deals that he's been able to pull off. Nobody's talking about any of this stuff.
No.
And remember, I believe it was Robert Gates, the defense secretary under Obama. I think that's who it was.
Jim Bush.
Was it under both?
He was a Bush. Yeah, it was under Bush and Obama. Yep.
And he said how Biden has been wrong on every major foreign policy decision.
He had.
What's that?
He has. Yeah. Sorry.
You know, no. I'm just saying. And it's an issue that Trump doesn't get enough credit for because we have COVID and all the other issues and just the faux outrage on all these pathetic fake, you know, Russian collusion and impeachment and all that nonsense. And not enough people give Trump credit for that. And I think it's an important thing. But who was that guy from NBC? We do have some people in the chat, by the way, who are commenting on some of the different things. Nico thinks it's deja vu. Mimi says Frank Luntz will be out of job when the election's over. The polling is obsolete. We'll talk about that. And that'll be a good topic. Nico says, I don't care at this point if Trump wins for the country. Or he does care. But I want him to win to make Nate Silver look like an idiot. Let's see here. And then we have somebody else talking about how he got lectured at church a few years back about kids being in cages. And Shanley says, well, that and Trump has resolved so many of those foreign policy issues. Yes. So I want to make sure I comment on all of those. But overall, I think it was a very positive debate for Trump. And it gave those people who have been on the fence a reason at the most important time, literally 10 days out before an election, a reason to vote for him. And I think those late deciders who have been on the fence, who have been sure, they have that reason now to vote for him. And I think that could be critical again in some swing states, especially in the Rust Belt.
Yeah, I think so. I think it helped them. I don't know if it's too late with the early voting. Maybe I do think it helped them.
Well, I'm hoping if you're an undecided voter, you haven't voted yet. Like you would think that's my biggest issue with early voting. Think back to 2016, like whether it's the Access Hollywood tape would have bothered you or the Comey letter, you know, one way or the other, those are two major stories that have happened in the last 3 weeks before an election. And if you already cast your ballot, you can't change it. Now, I think there's some states where you could change it, but why would you go through the hassle at that point? But that's my biggest issue. And that's why I'm voting on election day.
Me too. Yeah.
Yes. So again, net positive for Trump. And I agree with your analysis from the media. With them declaring it a draw, I think that essentially means that Trump did well.
Very well. Very well. I'm not just saying that. I think he did very well.
No. And we criticized Trump for that first debate. And I struggled to watch it. And I remember going to work the next day. And most of the people I talked with all shared the same things, especially those who I know support the president. They were just like, what was that? It was a shit show. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, that really is the best way to describe it. Yeah.
It was an important debate for the American people, at least to hear the two sides be civil for once. But I think it was important for Joe Biden to step on his toes and say something stupid like he did, which could cost him. We'll see. I think that Trump people are going to push it. I just don't understand what Joe Biden's saying about this whole fracking thing. It's remarkable. Like, you're on tape, not once, not twice, multiple times about it. And you keep saying you didn't say it. Like, how idiotic is that? I mean, are we supposed to think just the average voter's naive or something?
You know, here's the thing. This might surprise you, but I'm actually a pretty big environmentalist. But I'm in the old school environmentalist. Like, I don't want to see forests and virgin land chopped down and turned into housing developments. No, that's one of the reasons why I'm big against immigration, right? I think we have too much immigration. We're just paving over America to build shopping centers so that somebody gets wealthier. But when it comes to energy production, American energy production is actually very clean. And natural gas, which is a byproduct of fracking, is an extremely efficient, extremely clean relative to other fuels, form of energy production. And moreover, manufacturing in America is very clean and robust. It's protected, right? So if you're like, well, we have to have an industrial economy, to me, if you're an environmentalist, you would want as much domestic energy production in America as possible. And you want as much domestic manufacturing production in America as possible, because it all overall results in net increase in the global environmental standards. And moreover, if you don't have fracking is such a bad vibe, right? People have completely mischaracterized fracking, like you're going to die of cancer because of fracking. And it's just not true. Like the earthquakes because of fracking. A lot of that's just bogus, right? Bad math, bad research, bad science. Fracking is really, really good. And it's been crucial. And the fact is, our economy, we have $2.30 gasoline prices, right? Our energy prices are really cheap. The manufacturing comeback over the last 3 years is directly attributable to the surge in domestic energy production. America's the leader in oil and in natural gas production, thanks to fracking. We don't have to be held hostage to states like Russia and Saudi Arabia, et cetera. And Trump makes the point all the time, which is absolutely correct, is if he were really a pawn of Russia, he would want to shut down American energy production. He would want to target fracking, because then we would be more dependent on Russia, and the Europeans would be more dependent upon Russia and other hostile states. So I don't know. I just think fracking is a very, very good thing. I see very few downsides. And the fact that so many people are against it, just because it's scary, because it sounds scary, I think it's just it's anti-science. You know, if I wanted to be a smug lefty, I'd be like, well, if you're against fracking, you're against science.
Good point.
Right? That's what everything that they prefer, they just say it's science, right? It's like, hey, I want vanilla ice cream. Why? I want chocolate. Oh, it's science. It's got to be vanilla. That's what they do. They do that all the time.
Let's see here. We've got a couple things in the chat. Nika says mainstream media always talks about Trump escalating situations. Think back to Iran. But Biden's rhetoric on North Korea would escalate tension and make it far worse. Let's see here. Establishment kind of wants us dependent on middle class, the Middle East for oil. So let's move on. I want to focus a good part of this show on, so we're what, less than 10 days out on early voting and the polls and kind of where we see this race shaping up at this stage, because there are some, I do have some belief that there is some sort of tightening taking place. Is it to the level of 2016? I don't know. I missed 2016. I didn't see Trump taking Pennsylvania, Michigan, or Wisconsin. I had him losing by one state, and I have proof of that on Twitter. So if people don't believe me, I had it 274, 264. But I didn't think he had a chance in the Rust Belt. And you see some mixed polling in some states. You now have Wisconsin showing some tightness, Minnesota even showing some tightness, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I would have thought Pennsylvania was his best chance, but that rolling again with counting ballots that aren't even postmarked with what, like 3 days after the election from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Michael, your sound went off. Your speaker, your little, there he goes.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck. Something went on with the mic. Anyways. Where was I? But I would have thought Pennsylvania was his best chance of retaining a Rust Belt state other than Ohio. And I don't know. I just don't like that rolling there. And if it's close, I feel as though it could be taken away from him. I think Trump's going to do extremely well in Western PA, especially outside of Allegheny County, because we just talked about fracking in that massive shell's building. I think it's, I forget how many $5 billion cracker plant along the Ohio River related to the fracking industry. So that has a huge role in that part, that area of the state's economy. It's just that Philadelphia area is just, it's very northeastern-esque, whereas the rest of the state is much like the Rust Belt. And I don't know. I guess, what are your thoughts right now, 10 days out or whatever, 9 days out from the election?
So I just took and put a bunch of money, a fair amount of money. I'm not going to review the total, but you've seen it, Michael. It's a fair amount of money, right?
Yep.
And I bought on Predict It, so you can bet who's going to win each state. And I bet money with Trump winning Florida, Texas, Georgia, North Carolina, Ohio, and Iowa, which doesn't win him the race, but it gets it really close, right? Sorry, need more milk duds. I'm so obnoxious. I mean, all this proof. So I think that there's been a clear tightening. I think the polls are wrong. And I think that it's really on a coin toss, because I think that it could come down to like 5,000 votes in Michigan. Mentally, I think Ohio is almost certainly going Trump. I think Iowa going Trump. I think Georgia is going Trump. I think Texas is going Trump, right? So that's like your first tier of swing states. Then I think Florida is going Trump. And I want to get into this in a little bit about Florida, because there's some interesting data. I think North Carolina is going Trump, okay? And then I think that all he has to do is win one of those Midwestern Rust Belt states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I've actually seen some data out of Michigan where John James, the Republican candidate for Senate, is doing far better than people realize. And
very close.
Very close. And Gary, and then there was a poll out of Minnesota where the guy running against Tina Smith is very close, right? So
real quick, I want to make a point on that. It's almost as if like 2016, with how the Democrats were getting real, I don't know how to say this. They were getting a little too cocky about things. And so like this time they think they could flip Texas Senate. They think they could flip South Carolina Senate.
Yeah,
and Iowa Senate's going to be probably pretty close, but some of these states, I don't see it happening, where the Republicans could just sneak in and take like a Minnesota Senate or a Michigan Senate, because once again, they've abandoned the Rust Belt. That's just one point I wanted to make, but go ahead.
Totally right. So I think there's something going on. I tend to believe, and don't forget, in 2018, everyone's like, well, the polls were correct in 2018. The 2018 polls were actually massively off, especially for the Senate. Because
somebody
like Claire McCaskill lost in Minnesota. Nobody expected her. In Florida. Rick Scott won. I think it was Rick Scott that won re-election.
Yep.
DeSantis beat Gillum, right? So my point is,
don't forget Ohio too, Dane.
Ohio was
Richard Cordray is not the governor of the state. They missed it by 8 points.
Right. As Rich Barris likes to say. So my point is, I don't buy that Biden's 50,000 points ahead. I think it's a really tight race. I can't say that Trump is going to win, but I can say that Trump is doing a lot better than people realize. And I view, here's how I view that the race has evolved. I think minority men, Trump has improved his margins with. I think with whites overall, he's lost ground. And I think he's dramatically lost ground with seniors. I think seniors are very scared of coronavirus, and I think that they have turned against him. And I think that's why the polling's weak in states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and also in Arizona, states with a large white senior population. So if those guys come home for Trump, because I don't think that they want to vote for Biden, but I think that they're just afraid of coronavirus, they come home for Trump, he can win. I don't know. I think it's closer, though, than people realize.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. So up on the screen right now, I don't know if, Dane, you could see the 2020 electoral map, kind of how it looks. I for now, did move Arizona slightly red just based on a couple polls that have come out in the last week that showed much better numbers for Trump there than what we had previously seen. And just with like the voter registration numbers and a few other factors. So for now I have it red, but I could probably make that undecided. But just goes to show you, like, look right now at these numbers, assuming, you know, I'm being fair here. You know, I'm not trying to be a partisan nut. I have these states going blue. Now I could even change it, but look at this race right now, 258. And this is why I think Pennsylvania is paramount. But even if you were to, let's say, give Pennsylvania, oh boy, what am I doing here? Okay. any of these states, I mean, it just goes to show how important, like, why Trump is going to Nebraska on Tuesday. Well, if oh boy, this is a struggle, Dane, let me tell you.
Oh man, come on, Michael, you do it.
Wait, I'll get it. Okay, so like something like this, where let's see, Trump does that, he gets the second district of Maine.
It's tied.
Yeah. There's truly a conceivable path where it could happen, where you could have a tie. And then I think it goes to the congressional delegation by state who owns that. And I think the Republicans have a slight edge there, like 27-23 or something like that, where
right.
But it's possible. But again, I don't know enough about Nebraska too, but it's got to be close enough that Trump's going there. Maine, I feel confident about Maine too, that is. But overall, like I said, I agree with you, Dane. Trump's going to win Ohio. I don't know if you saw that 26-minute video I did that I posted on our YouTube the other day, predicting, kind of giving some explanations and background as to why I think Trump's going to win Ohio. But I just feel, I don't think there's enough votes out there. And I don't think the Democrats have done enough to try to flip white working class voters back to their side. I think, like Dan, you mentioned, maybe the whites that are going back would be more so seniors as opposed to the white working class voters. So I just think that makes Ohio difficult. I think Iowa's too difficult for them. Texas, it's just not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
I'll say one last point. I am confident about Florida, not just from listening to Rich Bearish, but from reading some other pollsters and looking at the early voting numbers. And I do want to share. Hold up. I'll get this. Let's see here. There's something else I wanted to share.
I want you to share Florida because we got to talk about Florida, because to me, there's a lot of importance in these early voting numbers with Florida.
We will make this happen, people. I apologize. I have quite a few tabs open that I wanted to share. One second. Could I have a good one on Florida?
I have some tabs open.
Okay. So this is, I wanted to share this.
Whoa, before. What so is
I've been
this?
Tracking on this? A daily what? Basis. It's crazy.
What Let's is this? This looks like a black Look, so slug this, or something.
Show you, yeah, the Democrat lead every day. It started out, it's voting by mail. And that was the first 20-some days, I would believe, of the race. And the Democrats went out ahead as much as 478,000 votes as of this past, whatever that was, maybe Monday or Tuesday. I think it was Monday. And then since then, the Republicans have won because these last 5 days because of early voting. Now, in the past, it was always the Republicans in Florida did well voting by mail, and the Democrats did well with in-person early voting. That flipped this cycle because of COVID-19, Trump ripping the idea of voting by mail. So the Republicans are now the ones early voting in person. Democrats are still voting by mail. But as you can see, the Republicans have trimmed 120,000 off this lead from the Democrats. This weekend, it was a little tighter. But again, from reading online, I don't know if this is true, but typically on Sundays, the African American population did something souls to polls. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Dane.
Yeah.
Where after their church services, they would take their congregation to the polls to vote. And apparently that still was taking place. But we'll see if the Republicans could eat into this margin some more. I like their chances in Florida.
So this is crucial. On Predictit, Florida is red, and it's been trending, surging red. And Florida, I think, is the keystone, not to be silly, the key to this whole election, right? Because polls are not real election day data, right? They're just people talking to a pollster, revealing their preference. But it's not the actual vote. It's not an actual vote. So you have a large discrepancy between what people say at the polls and what they do in the voting booth, right? And you can... The polls literally don't matter, right? I'm not trying to downplay them. I'm just saying, like, come election day, polls don't matter, or else Hillary Clinton would be president in one of the largest landslides in history. So with Florida, and I'm following this on Twitter, and you're starting to see it percolate to, like, the Nate Cohens and the Nate Silvers and all the official election forecasters. The early voting data is tracked by party, right? And there's originally vote by mail, and then they shut that off. And then so it starts out with vote by mail. You can submit a vote. Then they have in-person early voting where you can go to the Board of Elections and vote in person. Then so you have both of those going. And then vote by mail shuts down for like 2 weeks before the election, 1 week before the election. And it's only in-person early voting. Then I think that shuts down. And then you have election day. Well, the data from Florida suggests, as you just brought up, that it is much, much closer than it has any right to be. And, you know, each state is different, but they follow the overall trends, right? You're not going to have a state that, you know, if the demographics dictate that it's a plus 10 Biden victory, you know, one state will skew plus 20 Trump, you know, against, you know what I mean? Against what it should be voting for. Like if Biden has a 10-point margin, all the states will move 10 points towards Biden, whatever. But in Florida, the Republicans are doing really, really well there. And they are racking up the early votes and they're closing that gap to election day, which raises the possibility. This is why I'm going on. It raises the possibility that the polls are significantly wrong because we actually have real data on who's voting, who's turning out. What does the electorate look like? And granted, it's early data. It's not election day data. It's skewed. It's not complete. All that is true.
Florida, what, 5 million people have already voted. So that's something.
Yeah. And we know that the Democratic turnout is not what the polls are saying. We know that the Republicans are motivated and active. We know that they're bridging the gap. And yes, they're behind, but they're supposed to be behind. They're always behind historically come election day. And then they all vote. Republicans tend to vote on election day and it surges. The point is, if Florida goes Republican and convincingly so, Biden can still win the race. I'm not saying Biden, Trump is going to win the race. But it becomes much closer, right? So if you have all the polls saying one thing and the actual data is saying the opposite, then to me it shows that the polls are wrong. Does this whole rant make sense, like the point I'm trying to convey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, especially in Florida, I don't see Florida shifting that much to the right of the nation as a whole.
It doesn't make sense, right?
And I mean, what Trump won Florida by a little over a point last time. And I think I would not be surprised if he won it by two, just based on some of the numbers here. And here's a key metric on this website, which I posted in the chat across Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope. And this is somebody who's been tracking this data and has done an excellent job. But look at this. This map right here is just in-person early voting. So this doesn't factor in voting by mail. But you can see a lot of the states red. But let's go down here to one of the bluest counties in the state, maybe the second bluest county in the state, Miami-Dade.
Right.
If you could see early person, in-person votes, Republicans have a lead. There's been some polling data has hinted that Trump is going to narrow the margin in Miami-Dade. He lost it by 30 percentage points in 2016. 30. And there's been some polls that showed maybe as low as 15%. I think 20% is probably a realistic number, maybe. But that's 100,000 votes off the top line statewide if Trump is able to cut the margin there, which looks like it's happening. Because remember, and Dayton references, Trump is doing better with some African-American, I would say African-American men, but especially among Hispanics. And if you watch Rich Barris' show and even see some polls out there, there's a very real chance that Trump could take Hispanics in the state of Florida. And there is a big, especially Cuban population here in Miami-Dade, where the Cubans, as well as a small population of Venezuelans, who are going to vote heavily towards the Republicans again this cycle. And as you can see here, just the fact that the Republicans are ahead in Miami-Dade is remarkable. County to the north is where Fort Lauderdale is at. That's Broward. And this is the bluest county in the state. And it was probably only, I think, 4 or 5 more points blue compared to Miami-Dade. But you can see they're bringing in the votes in early person. But why is it that the second bluest county in the state, they're losing an in-person right. early vote? Something is happening there.
Something's happening.
Yes. And there's one other point I want to mention. There's this other aspect of this website where he's tracking these things called super voters. And super voters, I'm learning this within the last week or so, those would be the 4 out of 4 voters, the people who have voted in the last 4 elections. So what it's saying here is that the Democrats are actually at a deficit here, which makes it seem like maybe they have some new voters coming in or they're eating into some people who may traditionally vote on election day, where the Republicans have another almost 300,000 vote, 290,000 voters still out there who have voted in the past 4 elections who haven't voted yet, who are registered Republicans. So this margin here that we had mentioned, and I'll go down here to show it for all, Republicans are down 355,000 votes. Again, look at how many of these super voters are still out here. There's a large amount of Republicans who historically always vote who have not voted yet in Florida. So that margin that we had mentioned and we start seeing the chart going down, it's going to continue to go down because of that.
And look, this isn't crazy conspiracy theory. You know, let's squint at the numbers and try to, you know, make a logical argument out of this. Predict it. Go to Predict It and look at the surge in the Republican probability of winning. Trump was at a 50% chance of winning Florida as recently as October 18th. He surged to a 58% chance. So something is – other people are looking at this data. They are drawing the same exact conclusions that we are, that Trump is on par to win Florida. And I'm sorry, it is not a 10-point or an 8-point Biden race if Trump is winning Florida. If Trump is winning Ohio, it's not an 8 to 10-point Trump or Biden race, right? So the polls and the reality, the polls are massively overstating Biden's support. I still think he can win. But I do think it's a lot tighter than anybody realizes because of the data we're starting to see.
Yeah.
That's my take.
No, in another aspect of Florida is the Democrats do have a large, somewhat large, large voter registration edge. The Republicans have narrowed it substantially. But the last couple elections, Republicans have outvoted the Democrats. And when I was playing around with the numbers here, assuming that the independents go by 3 points to Joe Biden, which I listened to Rich Barris' show, I think on Thursday, and he talks with the Republican people and the Democrat people. He talks to them all, but he said the Democrat person had the non-party unaffiliated voters going by about 3 to Biden, and the Republican guy had it about 2.8 to Biden. So it's safe to say that Biden might win independence by 3 points. And if that happens, the Republicans just need to have a turnout, I would say, in the neighborhood of a R+3 electorate where they should be fine to win. And again, historically speaking, the Republicans have been outvoting the Democrats the last few elections down there. And if they get their voters out, I think they're going to win. And I would say at least a 1.5, I would say a 1.5 to 2 point race is how I would view it right now.
Yeah.
And somebody in the chat has mentioned registration edge in Florida is 134,000 votes for the Democrats. So if they brought all their voters out, they would be in good shape, but especially if you're winning independents, but they have issues doing that.
Yeah. So, I agree. So here's the point. Like, what's the takeaway? The takeaway shows that early voting data shows that the polls are wrong. They are wrong. It's not that Trump is guaranteed to win. It's that the polls are wrong and something is going on, right? Something is going on. I think it could be like 2016 again. It really, really could be. I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my gut.
Yeah.
Something's going on.
Here's how I view it. There's something has to be said about these other factors that we are seeing, whether it's regardless of the rally size, because Trump brings out people, but like around here, the number of yard signs, not just for Trump, but for Hagan or for the Republicans down ballot, something has to be said there because there's enthusiasm there. Then you have these grassroots events. There was another huge one today in Columbia, a big car parade. There's been other ones. There's all those boat ones that have taken place all across the country. There's been some big ones down in Florida. Actually, there was a big Latinos for Trump. And I don't know if you saw, they actually just released a Hispanic advertisement for Trump down in Florida, which was
I saw it.
Yeah, there was some dancing and everything, but I thought that was interesting that they're targeting those voters. But all these other various factors, and it just seems as though those measurements where you're looking at maybe as something predictive, they don't match up with the polling right now. And something's got to give. Where, you know, I listened to Barnes and Bears in and they had a 4-hour episode this past Thursday, and I finished it today while I was painting this room. And they're talking about it. They've never had, could ever recall an election where all of the factors are pointing towards a Trump victory with the exception of the polls. So something's got to give here. And I don't know. I agree with you. I think that at least now we have early voting data to back it up. And we could look at early voting data even in the Rust Belt. Wisconsin, Michigan, the Democrats have edges there, but they're not substantial enough where I would feel comfortable at all if I'm a Democrat.
And here's the other thing to keep in mind. Coronavirus skews everything. It's changed everything, right? And I would say, I don't think it's a controversial opinion to say, that Democrats are far more scared or worried or concerned about coronavirus than are Republicans. Republicans seem to be more, on average, right, more comfortable or more relaxed about it. So I make that point because I think that Democrats are, by and large, even though they have this natural tendency, it's further exacerbated by the fact they want to vote by mail and they want to vote in person early because they want to avoid coronavirus. I think Democrats are not keen on showing up on Election Day where there's tons of people there because of coronavirus. So the natural trend where Republicans vote on Election Day, Democrats vote early in some form, is going to be further exacerbated. I think Republicans have no problem showing up on Election Day voting in person, right? I think the, by and large. So if I'm a Democrat, I would really, really, really want to win the early vote, and dramatically so, because I would be very concerned that Democrats won't show up come Election Day. That is another factor to keep in mind. So like if you normally need to win by like 500,000 votes early as a Democrat to win the state, I think that fact gets compounded even more so because of coronavirus.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at another spreadsheet I've been using to kind of track, or somebody else is doing this spreadsheet, and there's actually been almost 2.7 million Democrat ballots requested in Florida thus far, and only about 1.7 have been, almost 1.8. So there's a lot of ballots out there, but it's one of those things where now, I mean, if they don't start sending them in here the next few days, are they ever going to come in? So the Democrats, if they're not going to encourage their people to vote in person, it's all on them, I would say, this week. I mean, because they're running out of time. This is the last full week before the election to get their ballots in. And if it seems as though, because I've been tracking this data pretty closely, and the Republicans have been doing well every day in these early in-person voting, and the numbers coming in on the voting by mail seem to have been slowing down here, as well as I was also been tracking Nevada. Just again, not from the perspective that I think Trump can win Nevada, because I don't think Trump can win Nevada. But if we're seeing a blowout of 8 to 10%, you would expect Nevada to be showing that. And the early voting data there, and that's a state where voting by mail is the big thing this time, because I think they sent ballots to everybody on the voter rolls. And now, again, similar to Florida, Democrats got a big lead voting by mail, and now the Republicans are eating into that lead with in-person voting. But nothing from that data in Nevada even is pointing toward a big blowout.
I want to make another point, and I just forgot it. I'm eating a milk dud instead. crap. What was I going to say? I forget my point. I'll turn back over to you. I'm sorry. I forgot.
That's all right. And as you, let's see here. The one guy to follow in Nevada. Now I know some people don't
Ralston.
Like him. Yes, John Ralston. So I've been following his blog, and I think right now he says the Democrats right now statewide are up 57,000 votes, and it was at the end of or all the early voting in 2016 it was 73,000. But he keeps prefacing this idea that there's a large amount of rural vote that has not come in the state, and those are more Republican voters, or they haven't voted in person yet. So again,
I remember. Sorry, keep going. Yeah.
No. Go ahead, because all I'm trying to say here is he keeps prefacing that it's not over yet. So although the Democrats are doing a fairly decent job of getting some of their ballots in, and he thinks Biden's going to win based on all his scenarios he has on this website right now, he has Biden winning all of them. But again, I think Trump only lost that state by about 20,000 votes. And in the worst case scenario, he has him losing it by 60,000, a few in the 30s and 40,000. So again, nothing to me pointing out towards a blowout nationwide.
So I was just going to say, I think that Democrats were very, very enthusiastic about voting early, and they really were waiting 4 years to vote against Trump. And I think there was a huge wave of all the Democrats, and the data kind of bears this out, right? All the Democrats are like, oh, I can't wait to vote against Trump. They get the mail-in ballot. They send it in early. Boom, there's this big spike. But then it's been slowly eaten away because they used up their ammunition at the very first round. And now Republicans are kind of offsetting it, right? That was my point. I think that like the Democratic key voters have already voted. And the people that vote Election Day will be like the guys that break for the Democrats at the last minute.
No. And I think of it kind of like a bill. Like, you get this in the mail. Why haven't you sent it in? Like, what's your rationale for holding it? You know, the million Democrats that have a ballot right now in Florida who haven't sent it in. Like, what are you waiting for? Are you not going to vote? Or, like, you know, something's got to be said about that. Because if your party, the Democrats, are not going to be encouraging you to go to the polls, well, again, it's on them this week to have you send it in. And if right. you don't do it, then they're out of luck. And the Republicans are going to have a decent idea in a number of these states of what they have to do in terms of turnout to be victorious. And I think in quite a few of them, it's going to be attainable.
Yeah. Yes. So that's where the election stands. As of October 25th, we've got almost 1 week and then we'll be done.
Yeah. And I want to just mention a couple other states real quick. So Target Smart is a Democrat outlet that I question some of their data, especially in Ohio, because I'll pull this up real quick. Let me show the screen. I'm only showing this because I think it's important to kind of, all right, so this is Target Smart. So if I go to a state like Ohio right now, it's showing that the Republicans actually have a lead in early votes cast there, 46 to 42. If that's the case, Trump's going to win the state, perhaps even bigger than 8 points. I wanted to mention that because in 2016, these numbers make sense in 2016. Hillary would have been up 48 to 40. And remember, and I mentioned this on this video I did the other day on YouTube, Democrats, Hillary had a lead to up to about 35% of the vote coming in. And a lot of that was related to this early vote in a lot of the counties that was being reported. And then once Election Day numbers came in, that's when Trump blew through that deficit and then ended up winning by 8. So these 16 numbers make sense, but something here doesn't jive unless the Democrats are doing that poor of a job of turning their ballots in Ohio. Let's see here. I got one more. So Michigan.
So here, Target Smart data. What is the root of that Target Smart data? Is that not early voting actual?
Yes. Well, okay. So here's how this
works. Registration
by
party, right?
So in certain states like Florida, you are registered to a party, like a Republican or a Democrat, or in like Pennsylvania, same case. In Ohio, if you don't vote in a primary, you're going to be a unaffiliated voter, a non-party affiliated voter in the state. So what this website does is they have voter rolls and they have modeling where they project what the electorate is right now. So they're saying that almost 40% of the people in the state have voted thus far, 2.1 million. And of that 2.1 million who have voted, based on their voter modeling system, they're saying the Republicans have a slight edge, 46-42, which I don't think is slight, because if they're ahead in this state, I don't see how Biden has a chance here, in my humble opinion. But so that's how they do it. But so Ohio is one of those states where they're modeling it because it's not real precise. Like in Mahoning County, I'm tracking the numbers right now. There's something like 25,000 non-party affiliated ballot absentee requests in Mahoning County where they could go either way, where I think a lot of them are going to vote for Trump, but they could go either way. But like a state like Florida or Pennsylvania, you actually say you are a Republican. So it doesn't require that primary vote. You either are one or the other, or you're just non-party affiliated.
So Target Smart data is saying Michael Mensinger, we know he voted Republican in the last three elections. We're going to guess that he's voting Republican in this election, right? Yes. Bob Smith, we know he voted Democrat in the last three elections based on his demographics, even though it doesn't officially say when he votes this time whether he's voting Democrat or Republican, we're going to estimate that he's a Democratic voter. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So they make that's the first estimate on the early returns. And then they make a second estimate on how the overall state will be based on those early returns. So there's two forecasts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they're forecasting what currently isn't. So this isn't like forecasting what it's going to look like. This is just based on the ballots cast right now.
So they're saying, they're saying in Michigan, okay, the dark bar is 2020.
Yeah.
The light blue bar is 2018. Well, wait a minute. So here's the concern, though. In Michigan, the Republicans massively outvoted the Democrats on an early level, and they still lost the state in 2018, right?
Yeah, that's why I question some of this data. I question now, like in 2016, it makes a little bit of sense. They had a slight lead in early voting,
right?
By 3 points or so, roughly. Which, when you look at the election returns coming in, that sort of made sense because it's pretty tight the whole way. I don't know what's going on here in 2018 to where they come up with their numbers, but again, let's just for now just say 2020's inaccurate picture. Like if you're going into election day as a Democrat only up 43-38, you have to be concerned with the polling data that's out that shows who's going to be voting on election day. If there's a large chunk of Republicans going to be voting on election day, this is not a huge lead whatsoever in this state to maintain. And that's why I think the Republicans are going after it yet again, despite some polls early over the summer not looking good. Then you look at Wisconsin, another state, they have 43% of their total ballots cast compared to 2016, 1.2 million votes. Again, this is where I question the data. 51, 37 in 2016, only 40-37 now. But again, it's important to note this is a Democrat outfit. This isn't a Republican one. I question some of their modeling here because if it's accurate, the polling cannot be right at all.
Right. It's weird. There's a bunch of weird stuff just popping up, and it doesn't make sense. Some of this stuff just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. At the end of the day, there are going to be pollsters who are going to be completely wrong, and there are going to be some that could be completely right. And it could be where Trafalgar's wrong, right? I mean, it could happen where Biden just wins in a blowout, but it doesn't seem like all these other measures you're looking at and some of the early voting data that we're seeing that that's taking place. And Trafalgar came out today. I think Trump up in Michigan, Trump up in North Carolina, Trump up in Florida, and maybe still down maybe about a point and a half in Pennsylvania. All of which seem reasonable. And I know like Nate Silver once again tonight just like went completely after him, which again, we'll see who gets the last laugh here. But he loves – where's the outrage with Gravis showing Biden up 11 points in Michigan? Like one of these two is going to be way wrong and one's going to be perhaps right, or maybe it's going to fall in the middle. But why does he always go after right-wing pollsters or pollsters that show better results for Trump? Could it happen again? Like – you were completely wrong. His only claim to fame in 2016, by the way, is the fact that all the other models showed Trump's chances less than 10%, where his was at like 27% or something like that.
Right.
You were still wrong. What part of it? You were wrong, and your system was wrong again in quite a few of the Senate and governor races in 2018. We worship this guy like he's the greatest forecaster out there, but his – results. I mean, anybody could probably have called some. Okay, maybe some of the results in 2008 were surprising, with like an Indiana flipping, maybe a couple other states flipping. He got 50 out of 50 right. But again, Obama winning, yes, that's not a surprise.
That wasn't hard to predict. I think.
I'll make one more point about this. This idea that Joe Biden is going to win by a greater margin than Barack Obama to me is laughable. Like Barack Obama was young, charismatic. He was a change candidate. He had the youth behind him. I'd like to go to these pollsters and ask him what does Biden have going on his side? Like you're not a change candidate. You've been around for 47 years. You really don't have the youth behind you either. So how can you justify an 8-point lead?
Here's the other thing I wonder about is minority turnout. Don't forget that Obama won in part because he was able to drive up minority, particularly black turnout in states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, even Wisconsin, right? What if you don't have very strong black turnout? The Solstice of the Polls Day kind of shows that we didn't get a huge black turnout surge in Florida. Does a state like Pennsylvania, which needs, if you're a Democrat, you need Philadelphia, black voters in Philadelphia to turn out big time? Because Allegheny, the Pittsburgh area is trending redder and redder. So if you can't get your black voters out, does it slip away and it goes Trump anyways? I don't know.
Well, that was one of their biggest issues in 2016. I looked in my Ohio video the other day at Cuyahoga County here in Ohio, where Cleveland's located. Barack Obama had almost 450,000 votes there in 2016. Wow. Hillary Clinton had less than, I think, 397,000 votes. So there's 50,000 votes in one county alone where people just who voted for Obama likely did not vote for Clinton. And then you go to Wayne County in Michigan. Same story. They didn't get the voters out. And as a result, Trump was able to win the state of Michigan. So there's something to be said there. But the concern would be, if I were a Democrat, is either, I guess, A, the biggest concern is, are you going to get African-Americans out to vote? But the other one that could play a factor in some of these states are some of these polling, some of the polling nuggets out there that show Trump polling slightly better with African-American men, especially. And it could be enough where it could tip a race in like Michigan. I mean, it was 10,000 votes in 2016. And I expect it to be tight there. I expect it to be tight again in Philadelphia. And if Trump can make some gains there, will it be enough to offset some of the white working class or white voters he might lose? Maybe not, but maybe if he's able to hold on to most of them, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know. It just, I'd like to be skeptical. I'm also not the type to say, hey, I think Trump's going to win. I'm not, because I follow some of these people who just think Trump's going to win in a blowout. Well, I'm not there. I mean, could he? Perhaps. But I like to try to be reasonable and try to read as much data and information as possible. And again, there just seems to be a disconnect out there. And that's why I'm just unsure what to believe right now. And
yes, unsure. The uncertainty. We don't know what's going on, but we know that the default story is wrong, I think.
Yeah. And I push back on these models that show Trump's chance. Like right now at 538, I think it's like 12%. Very small odds. But I just don't get
– wait, can we bring up – so if you go to 538, okay, there's a forecast tool. I didn't mean to cut you off. But
no, go ahead.
It's crucial. Go to 538.com and there's like a interactive, right? You go to the right-hand side of the website and it says choose your battleground winners. And so right now, Trump has a 12-in-100 chance of winning. Now, we both said two things on – and this little tool says you can pick states where you're sure he's going to win, Trump's going to win, or Biden's going to win.
Oh, this is great because there's something I want to test here.
It'll recalibrate. Now, let's just pick the two states we talked about today. What states are we – Ohio. Let's say we think Ohio is going Trump. Like, I think that you and I know for certain that Ohio is going to go to Trump. If you just click that – all of a sudden, Trump has a 21-in-100 chance of winning, or 21% chance. If you click Florida as Trump, Trump's chances of winning go to 42-in-100. So that is the map I think we're really looking at, right? This is crucial to understand. Nate Silver is saying it's a 12-in-100 chance for Trump. You flip Ohio and Florida, and we've got pretty good data to say that these states are red.
Especially Ohio.
Especially Ohio, right? Like, just take off Florida. You go to a 21% chance with Trump if you flip Ohio, and a 42% chance if you flip Florida. You flip North Carolina, and Trump has a 53% chance of winning. That's a state we didn't talk about at all, is North Carolina. Because there's been early voting data in North Carolina, but it's a lot harder to read and understand, I think.
Yeah, because a lot of that Southern Democrats that might be more crossover voters. And again, the Democrats had a three. I remember 2016 vividly. The Democrats, especially on Election Network, kept talking about this early voting edge that they have in the state of North Carolina, like 300,000 votes. But again, that maybe didn't factor in the crossover votes and then factor in the election day turnout. So, but yeah, this is actually really fascinating. I actually asked Rich Barris earlier this evening, what are the odds Trump wins if he wins Florida? And again, I'm confident for sure about Ohio.
I
feel fairly confident about Florida. It's one of those tight things, but like a 1 or 2 point lead there in Florida is significant with how big the population is. And just some of the numbers we're seeing, I think Trump's going to do very well again in the panhandle. And you got to figure if you're, from my perspective, where are you going to make up? If let's say it's 70,000 votes in Miami-Dade, okay? 70,000.
Right.
Where you have to make up those votes somewhere. And I think the only spot right now I'm really seeing where Biden could make up those votes would be up in Jacksonville, Duval County. They're having some success, the Democrats, with early voting. That's a traditional Republican county. And maybe down in the Tampa Bay metro, I think Pinellas County is the big one. But again, if you make gains in Miami-Dade, the second, I think the largest county in the state, it's enough to offset. And remember, Trump won it by, what, 120,000 votes in 2016. And then let's go back to 2018. Democrats looked great there. And on a great night nationwide for the Democrats, the Republicans bucked the trend and were able to win the Senate and the governor seats there. And that was the moment for me when I just felt as though Florida was going to go to Trump.
If yeah.
DeSantis and Scott could win, especially with Gillum, big push by the media to tout him as this big change type guy for Florida, this and that. And DeSantis being I thought maybe they were accusing him of being a racist or what have you. And for him and Scott to win on election night to me was remarkable. And it seemed and it was interesting. They have slightly different maps to them and slightly different compared to Trump, but they still were able to pull it off, which is interesting.
I just want to close this on one final point. If Trump wins, imagine the spoils, right? Not only do we have a 6-3 Supreme Court right now, because Amy Coney Barrett's going to get confirmed, but we will have a 7-2 Supreme Court most likely, because I think Breyer, is it Breyer that's still on there? Or
Breyer's 82. And then the next one, I think Thomas might only be early 70s.
So you get a 7-2 Supreme Court majority and you replaced Clarence Thomas potentially. So that's for the rest of our lives. You will have a conservative majority on the Supreme Court. You get the federal judiciary. Trump has already replaced something absurd, like a third of the federal judiciary, if not more. Or maybe it's like a quarter to a third of the federal judiciary has been judges appointed by Trump. If he wins re-election, that number is only going to go up, right? And there's a new law or new executive order that he's passing that gives him the control of being able to fire civil servants, so he could potentially start to remake the executive branch. I mean, this is going to be a huge, if Trump wins, I'm not like, this will be huge for the Republicans and for conservatives in general. So if you're on the fence, you absolutely need to vote Trump, because it's so essential.
And if you're still on the fence, just send us a DM. Trish, I think we've been very fair in our assessments of Trump. We've criticized him when we think he needed criticized. We've given him praise where we think he should have praise and credit for when it's due. But I mean, I was somebody who was on the fence about him in 2016. I voted for him, and I've been very surprised, pleasantly surprised how much he's been able to accomplish. Maybe I don't like his style, but he gets stuff done. And what can you argue? For me, Supreme Court to pull off these three, especially with the way this last one went down, it went pretty smoothly, which I sort of was surprised about. And that may have been something strategic where the Democrats just feel like, you know what, Biden's going to win. We're going to pack the courts, that type of thing, which that was another fascinating thing. It wasn't talked about in the debate the other night. But real quick on Trafalgar, I see Ryan Gerdusky is actually defending them, which I agree with. He should. How in 2018 he called the Democrats holding on to West Virginia and Montana. And another thing is, and I wish Trafalgar would have done this, he actually had Kyrsten Sinema up 3 in 2018, a week out before the election. And then there was a slew of polls out in the last week that showed McSally taking the lead. So he went back in the race, and then he showed McSally, I think, up 2. Had he just kept that, I think his credibility would have been that much better, because he was one of the few who actually had Sinema up, and he was right. And then he went with this late poll where he kind of went with the grain, or his number showed it, and he ended up being wrong. But for the most part, the guy isn't wrong. Like, I've listened to him talk a number of times over the last month, and he has his rationale, and he's
Roger
very
Callahy
strong.
Or what's his name? Like
Robert Cahaly.
Cahaly.
He has some very strong opinions about how he does it, and everything he says makes sense. Like, we don't use strictly calling. If it's we're struggling to get somebody we want to get, we'll text them and we'll do the poll over through text, or we'll do an online survey or different ways where some pollsters do strictly calling people up, or some might be strictly email, or some might be strictly online, where he uses like 4 or 5 methods to reach people. And he asks, I think, less than 15 questions a survey, because if you go with a real long survey, some of those people who might be on the fence about voting might be like, you know what, I'm not going to really answer these questions. I'm just going to hang up. Short to the point, he asks certain questions, and he's looking to see, I think it's a social desirabilities thing, essentially maybe like a shy Trump voter type of thing. And it's not like he just adds 3 or 5 points to Trump. He looks inside the data and he might, somebody who's undecided, you could tell from the answers where they're actually going. And he has success with it. And he was right. Nobody wants to give the guy freaking credit in 20. He was right. And Nate Silver's just attacking him today. Again, we'll see who gets the last lap.
Nate Aluminum. He's just very cocky. He's a jerk.
Like, some of those guys on the left side, I see some people call him the election mafia, but you got Nate Cohn, Nate Silver, Dave Wasserman, Elliot Morris, I think is his name. The other one, GLA, he's for The Economist. All these guys, they all like, it's nauseating to me, and I would like nothing more. I agree with my cousin Nico. It would be very gratifying to see them wrong again, especially Nate Silver. Like, if you're wrong this time, what do you got? Like,
You
know what I mean?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Just a week.
We shall see. So we'll save the talk about Christina Hagen and Tim Ryan maybe for another episode. We'll see. I do want to do at least one episode.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say at least one more episode before the election. Maybe another one to get in some other talk about. We'll see, even if it's a short one. Before the election, so maybe one or two more episodes before then, because I'm sure there's going to be plenty to talk about. But yeah, I thought it was good to focus on some of the early voting data and provide some context. I know there are some people in the chat commenting as well. I'm trying to see if there's anything to mention from Periscope. Nothing that I want to bring up, but Buck5889, appreciate a lot of your comments. You seem to definitely know your stuff. Harry Enton's the other one he had mentioned. Yeah, how could I forget him? And he was forecaster Harry Enton, I think, on election night. You should go read the 538 blog and read these people reading the tea leaves in Florida and how wrong they were. It's quite gratifying.
Before we conclude, I just want to say about the Hunter Biden photos. And Google is censoring them. You can't find them if you go on Google, but there are some websites out there. I don't want to say the dark web, but some more unscrupulous websites where the Chinese, apparently, there's this group that is a pro or an anti-Chinese Communist Party, pro like Chinese democracy group. And they have these photos because they got the copy of the hard drive and they have been leaking them bit by bit by bit. And they are photos of Hunter Biden in tons of his like, him taking pictures of himself naked. He was Hunter Biden is super into taking photos of himself with prostitutes and naked as well. And they're out there and they're leaking. And the rumor, I'm just going to put this out there. And I'm not saying I believe, I'm just saying that this is out there. There's a rumor that there's some really scandalous stuff on these hard drive tapes. They were leaking these photos to kind of establish legitimacy that they have the hard drive. And there's some really, really horrible stuff apparently on Hunter Biden's laptop. In addition, I'm not even talking about like him being bribed by the Chinese officials and bribing his father, which nobody talks about, but that seems to be a legit thing. But I'm talking really horrible things. So you can find it if you do a little bit of Googling, but could be an October surprise over the course of next week. I don't know.
Yeah, and so I didn't know what to make of these things. I just thought, it's not going to stick. But when I watched the Frank Luntz focus group the other night, like everyone except maybe one or two in the focus group said they want to hear more details on it. They were curious, and they just were like, why does Joe Biden not have a straight answer on this? And he seems like he's all over the place, and it leaves them uneasy to vote for him. And again, I never thought much of it. I'm like, this isn't going to stick. But it seems when it was actually brought up in the debate, I was actually really, really surprised. So I imagine, I know Jack Posobiec is one of the ones who has the hard drive, and I'd imagine he'll be leaking more and more. I think their key is if they have something connecting Biden to it. I know they've released some emails that seem to hint that, where they call him big guy or something like that, and he gets a 10% cut. But if there's something, I'd imagine you'd have to get it out here earlier this week. So we shall see.
I have seen Hunter Biden naked.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I know. It's not like something I went looking for. I saw that it was in a thread and they just started leaking the photos and I was like, oh my God. So there could be a big October surprise coming. I don't know. We'll see, but it's real.
They're running out of time, Dave.
Yeah, I know.
So before we conclude, I want to encourage everybody tomorrow, I think at 2 o'clock on Richard Barris' show, him and Barnes are going to be on. They're going to start talking about their Rust Belt poll they're doing now through the election. I think they're hitting PA, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. But the big reason why I want you to go on, Dan, you maybe were a little premature with some of your predicted stuff, is Barnes is going to give his election predictions. Nonetheless, whether you bet or not on politics, the wealth of knowledge that those guys have, it's something I just encourage you, just for the sake of knowledge purposes. You don't have to necessarily have to agree with them, but just listen to what they have to say. And I think you'd be surprised how much you could learn just listening to those guys and how they go in the details on stuff. And I think I've been saying that every episode since he's been on, and it's not like I had like some deal with him to tell him that, but I thoroughly enjoy listening to them, and I can't wait for tomorrow's show, because I think there'll be some good details. And they're both hinting that they feel sort of like you, Dane, that something, it feels awful reminiscent of 2016.
Yeah, something's up.
And we'll see with their polling, and maybe we'll see it. And if that Target Smart's right, there's no reason to believe that Trump doesn't have a very realistic chance to win Wisconsin or win like a Michigan. We didn't go over Pennsylvania because now that's weird there. So Pennsylvania on that side is very lopsided to the Democrats. When you kind of dig into the numbers, I think earlier in the week, it was like 55 or 60% of that came from two counties, Allegheny and Philadelphia County, which are obviously the two biggest Democrat counties in the state. So I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if it's just that's a state where you're going to have a very high election day turnout for Republicans. It appears like that's going to be the case, but that's one state where that website doesn't look promising for Republicans. So we shall see.
We shall see. Okay. Well, we'll do another episode where we do our predictions. We'll do state by state, and we'll do maps. Okay, and we'll compare whoever has the better map wins.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll let everybody know when that is. Mimias, will you be live on election night? Maybe I'll do a couple short little videos or something on election. I don't know yet. We'll figure something out. Interesting enough, I do like watching CNN on election night. I think John King, I think that's his name, on the big board. I enjoy watching him, so I'll probably have CNN on, but maybe we could do some short videos or something like that. And Buck 5889 wants to know what's up with you and the Hunter picks, Dane.
No, I wasn't. Okay, look, I wasn't like going after the Hunter picks. They dumped them in the thread that I was on, and I don't know. It's just shocking, right? Like, this is 2020. Like, you can see these photos. I don't know.
Did QAnon post them?
No, I am not a QAnon guy. No, QAnon did not post them. But if you want to find the photos, QAnon is actually a good clue on how to get there. Like, you look where QAnon posts, those type of websites, that's where you can find the Hunter Biden photos. There's a hint. But no, I'm not a QAnon guy. That's a dumb conspiracy theory. But I don't know. Hunter Biden's a sketchy dude. He's definitely a crack addict. And, you know, all the crap the Trump kids got, at least Trump didn't raise a crackhead.
And we'll conclude on that. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Please go and first on social media, because I'll screw this up, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. Maybe I'll do a couple more little random election preview videos. I'm not really great with any other states other than Ohio, but maybe from reading the tea leaves, I could do another short video or something like that. And then on the podcast side, just, you know, we're on all of them, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google. So please subscribe on there and tune in and tell your friends. And I'll try to post a lot of stuff on social media this week. So if you see anything, be sure to comment. We like the when it's very active and there's some debate taking place on there. So again, thank you everybody for tuning in, whether it was live or on the podcast. And we'll be in touch. Just watch our social media in terms of our next episode or episodes before the election, where we do our predictions and all that. So any final words, Dane?
Go Trump. Hunter Biden. Say a prayer for Hunter Biden. That guy's a really, really sad individual. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. Oh, we're sponsored by Milk Duds this episode. I've consumed an entire packet. Milk Duds, because when diabetes isn't enough, Milk Duds.
Very good. All right, everybody. Take care, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Bye, Michael.
Bye-bye.